Hey, and welcome to the Design Podcast. I'm your host, Ashton Snook, and we're on a mission to share the creator's voice. Before we get into today's episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave us a star rating. Today, we're joined by Johanna Drew, creator director and partner at Output, a brand and digital agency that has created design languages for Mixcloud, ClearBank, MindGym, and Monzo Business, to name a few. Hi, Johanna. How's it going?
Super well, thanks, Ash.
Yeah, good. Excited to get into this convo. We've been trying to get it in Dario for some time, right? You were saying it's been like already started to get super busy.
Yeah.
For Output, which is great to hear. And I mean, if there's anything like the work that we've seen you producing, and for our listeners, I'm a little bit of a fanboy of what you are up to as well. So it's quite nice to have this conversation.
Thanks. Thank you.
Dive into things. No, it's a pleasure. So yeah, we're gonna be looking at Output, the studio, and how particularly you're developing creative relationships. And as I said, some really great creative relationships and some really lovely brand work. But for those folks who are unfamiliar with Output and the studio, can you tell us about the focus? Who do you work with? Why do you work with them? What's all the kind of things that you folks produce?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, for anyone that doesn't know us. We're essentially a design studio, and our focus is very much on creating brand experiences. So kind of using the power of design to transform products and services. And through that, we work with a lot of ambitious businesses that really recognize the power that brand has to kind of really transform and create like these really amazingly unique brands and experiences. And I think the businesses that come to Output are generally, I would say, or the ones that we really love working with, and we kind of obviously have the door open for the majority of the time, are the types of businesses that really want to kind of challenge expectations. Like they've got a product, but they really want to flip the category on its head or challenge the norms that live inside of it. Or they've got something that's maybe underserved and they want to really bring it to the kind of the forefront. And because of that, we don't really have like clients within specific sectors or specific kind of areas of their kind of growth. It could be a startup, it could be a scale up that maybe just wants more visibility or wants to kind of re-engage themselves or kind of hit the ground running, get more investment. Or it could be like an organization that just is really at a point of like, we need to really shake this up. We want to really re-energize the brand. And for any of those, they're super interesting. So you have then clients like Dave. We've just done a big rebrand piece for the Comedy Channel, which is much about re-energizing the brand versus like your ClearBank that we launched just before Christmas, which is like that's a scale up, like it's the fastest growing tech company. And they want to hit the ground running, like they're scaling like nobody's business. So they're very kind of different types of clients, but essentially they all have that kind of thing in common that they want to push those category conventions. And then I guess, I mean, you're familiar with our work. For anyone that's not kind of not looked at us or heard of us before, we're really at home where brand meets digital, and that's like our real sweet spot, really. So kind of creating quite immersive brand worlds, creating like seamless connections between like on and offline. And yeah, that's kind of the crux of things, essentially. Like they're the bits that kind of give you joy and the bits that get you out of bed in the morning to create these really amazing kind of experiences for.
Yeah. And we're gonna dive into those. Hopefully we can talk a bit about ClearBank. You got Mixcloud on there, Cuckoo, so many good products. People gotta come check out your website. We'll make sure we link out to that, I think. Before we get into the clients and some specifics on the projects. As a creative director, I know you've got a partner and you coordinate and run the studio, but can you tell us about your role and how today you're spending your time and what your relationship is with those clients and your team? And
yeah,
tell us all about the role.
So I've had a conversation with someone recently about how my role has shifted quite a lot. Probably from something that I would suspect I didn't know was kind of coming, but from a very kind of general point of view, I'm a creative director, obviously. I'm kind of overseeing the majority of the projects that go through the studio from initial briefing, I guess. Some of those really early calls where we're kind of listening and trying to work out, is this has this project got legs? Is there interest here? Mm. Is this something tangible that we want to hook onto? Do we believe in it? Is it going to help change the world? Is like, how can we help this business like thrive? So, and then right through to kind of how that project runs through the studio and kind of goes out to press. So I'll kind of oversee all of that work. And that's not me on the tools in any respect. I would not claim that anymore for me. It's much more about my kind of role is asking a lot of questions, doing a lot of listening, kind of poking and prodding the team, the work, the process, like as that kind of work goes through, trying to kind of make sure we're increasing the benchmark of what we deem is amazing work. How can we make it better? How can we make it stand out more? Can we improve the process? Can we improve the tools, the technology that we're using to help us get there? Like keeping the team like really galvanized about the work and what we're trying to set out to do and the clients as well. So that's kind of, I guess that's kind of day to day. But then there's this other bit of my role, which is just kind of crept in much more recently, which I don't know how I feel about it, in all honesty. But I feel like I'm a bit of a shepherd.
Okay.
And I'll kind of sit between like our team and the client, and I'll essentially be this kind of shepherd in between, where the client could be having a wobble. The work is pushed too far for them, or they're uncomfortable with something, or maybe they want to, maybe they don't feel like they're being listened to, or they want to shape things in a slightly different way, or they're not quite understanding the process. And my job there is to kind of try and get them back on track and trust in the process and trust in the work that we're kind of creating. But it can also be really like functional, like I've started calling it bad cop, where I'll essentially have, like, you want me to play bad cop now? So I'll be the bad cop and say, like, I'm sorry, that's not in scope. It's too late to make those types of changes. Like, this isn't what you're asking us to do. Let's reframe that for you. And kind of being this kind of shepherdy sounding board in between yeah. the two kind of teams, the client and our team, because we want to create the best work, but sometimes the client needs a bit of handholding or kind of just show that we're listening. We're empathizing, we know where we're going to get to, trust in the process, trust in us. So I think a lot of my role has started to move into this. I'm not quite sure what to call it yet. So I've got like shepherdy sounding board vibes on the go.
Yeah, I totally get it. It sounds very similar to my actual job, like not the podcast, right? That's it's me and my brother, and we get to do what we want, which is cool. But like my actual job is it sounds somewhat similar. And I've got this, I don't know if I coined this, I'm going to say that I have, but in my head, I kind of have these sort of three semi-personas that help me kind of look at this shepherding problem, which is like coach, curator, creator, right? And a coach is this, like, as you were saying, it's like the shepherd, you kind of interface a heck of a lot between like being good and bad cop and working between different clients, which for me is my team and senior stakeholders and the customer and the technology team, all that sort of stuff. Then you've got the curator, which is, you know, helping the team actually do the work. So the main part, and a bit that I probably index in a bit too much, but I kind of love as well, is the creator. So still getting into the tools. And by just nature of the size of our team, I still get to play a bit with Figma, which I quite love. But it's interesting how you know, as you kind of go from being an IC, like a hands-on designer, and stepping up to managing and creative direction, how that role changes. And I hadn't, you know, when I started sort of getting into leadership roles, like you, hadn't also thought like, oh, actually my role is going to evolve into something that feels more, I don't know, businessy,
yeah,
more managery, more about people. It's really interesting, but it's so important. But I think what's important about creative directors is that you've come from a background of producing the work, whereas there are a lot of companies where there are managers which perhaps have not got any creative background. I think it's hard for them to have the empathy,
yeah,
with the team. But clearly you do, because the outcomes that you're producing at output are really strong. How did you find that transition, not getting into the details so much? Does it sit nicely for you? Or do you still want to sort of play around a little bit with pixels?
I think I'd be lying if I said it was an easy transition. you kind of want to get your hands a little bit dirty still. And I guess sometimes every now and again, I'll roll up my sleeves, take something out of someone's file, put it in one of my own, have a little play so I can give a bit more educated feedback. But I do not in any way go, here it is. sometimes it's quite nice just to have a play and trying to work out, like, how could this push be pushed a little bit more? Is this interesting? Like, just to open up a few more questions. But yeah, I mean, it didn't sit well at all to start with, to kind of hand over the reins, to give someone else the kind of more of the vision for where this kind of project could start to go. And obviously you kind of have to get your head around it to start with, of they're doing creative work that's amazing, but it's not exactly what you imagined. And that's okay. Mm. I really like it actually when I'm now surprised. And that's the best response, I think, for me, for someone doing great work. It's not what I was expecting to see, but it's still driven by the strategy. It's still driven by all of our processes, and it's still correct, like, fit for the clients. It's going to take them to amazing spaces, but it's not what I imagined. And I think that's real success for the team then. Like, this has surprised me. I like it.
Yeah, no, I get it. I totally get it. And I think that's again, somewhat, I think I resonate quite closely with that story. And I think I've heard the same thing from a lot of our guests. I'm like, we spoke with Gadi Amit season one. He's like an amazing designer. He was in a big corporate role and he was so far removed from the work, I think in his own words, that he left and set up his own studio so he could be hands-on again. And he's built his team back up and
right.
He still gets to play a little bit. And I love that he's carved out his own world with that. And we've got Michael Foreman, we recorded with recently. He's a really cool guy. The episode's, I think, going to drop next week, which is nice, which will be several weeks in the past when we launched this episode. But anyway,
shameless
plug. He's cool. And he was like, again, we kind of spoke about this story because he's a chief creative officer at his firm. And it's like, what I loved about what he kind of said, it simply is like, look, at some point you kind of got to let go of the ego, basically, which I think we all have a little bit as creators, which fuels us, which is kind of a good thing and sometimes a bad thing. And then he's like, man, you just got to like learn not to take shit so seriously. Because I think as designers, we are very serious people who know we are creative and have fun and think laterally. But
yeah.
I think we take it really seriously, like the pixel. We care. We care about every little pixel. And so it is interesting. It's kind of interesting that it takes a bit of time to weather yourself to that transition.
It's so easy to be like in the weeds of it. Like you're on the project, you're on the tools, like it's your life's desires. It's everything you're doing at that time, isn't it? And we're a small studio. It's not like you're going to have tons of different things that you're switching between. There's probably two projects for you to be on the go with at once. So kind of being in the weeds and then, everything is important. Every bit of feedback is taken like 100% on kind of board. Whereas you're in your helicopter as creative director, you're zipping across all these other projects and you're like, bit of that. a little bit of a poke there, like nothing to do there. Like you can just be so much kind of phased by it all because you're just seeing it from such a kind of a higher view. I guess it's that kind of wood for the trees kind of
expression. Yeah,
I'm well out of the weeds. I'm in my helicopter and I can see everything around me. And on the grand scheme of things, it's okay. It's really okay.
You know what? It's really interesting because I kind of. We're like my team is big-ish, but it's not like massive. It's not like 50 people, like what, 12, 15 people most, fluctuates up and down, depending on project types as well. Mixture of consultants, some great in-house staff as well. And they have this kind of blend. But anyway, the point I was trying to get to is the helicopter is interesting because I find that I'm kind of like across lots of projects, like three different teams, probably about a dozen projects in flight. Sort of messing up the acronym there, but anyway. And so, you know, same thing, like that holistic view, which I love because you get to see all these different things and you can start to help people coordinate an idea sort of across each other and you think, oh, that's great. But I also find that I get into the detail sometimes because the team need a little bit of like detail. Yeah. And it's an interesting one of like, how do you balance the right amount of strategy up, but also making sure that the quality at that lower level, like literally dropping out the helicopter into the forest and seeing what's going on. Yeah, exactly. When you get into the detail, how much do you get into detail? How do you look at design with teams like jumping into Figma? Do they do presentations? Is it just a sort of a conversation over a coffee? How do you kind of go about that discussion? How are you guys progressing?
We everything is done in Figma from a brand perspective and obviously digital as well. So it's really easy. It sounds like an advert for Figma.
Well, but Figma makes like, our lives easier for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't make the switch until like the first year of COVID, and again, it's just like, why haven't we done this sooner? We're all trying to baffle around with Sketch and sending files to each other. It's the most annoying situation in the world. But yeah, I mean, it just means the guys can just very quickly show me what they're thinking, what the direction is. I can offer a little bit of kind of advice or a poke or a question, and then jump back out again. I guess I'm quite a fan, and I was telling a designer this earlier who kind of went through a presentation with me, like, or the work that he's been doing, and he was just showing me the final things, and he polished loads of stuff. I thought, I just want to see the mess. Like, I'm happy for your file to be a complete picture. Like, it can be whatever you want it to be, as long as, like, you're just showing me some, like, show me your working, show me how you've arrived at this solution. Tell me what starts to be interesting for you. Don't just show me this final thing and think you have to polish everything up. So I'm personally a massive fan of just seeing the kind of what I call the bodge. Like, show me the bodge. See if it resonates. Is there anything interesting in that? Cobbling some things together and see if it's interesting. We can build on that. There's an idea in it. We can kind of finesse from there.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I love file hygiene. That's a weird thing to say, but I love having structure. But I think there is a realization, I don't know, like after doing this sort of role for a couple of years, that when you try and build like a design system and try and systemize everything, it like kills like designers, like they hate it. And so you've got to have, you know, we have like certain pages in our structures where they're very sort of like structured. So the flows are like super clean. The file layers are super, super clean. But then we have like the concept pages, and those are like a crazy art project.
Yeah.
And it's so, because you can kind of just like, how you arrive to the idea is very unique, I think, for a designer. And you need to have some stuff for handover and for presentation and actually for testing and all that good stuff. But as long as, you know, but you don't want to miss the mess either, because you might not figure out, like, the outcome might not be as good as it could be.
That's
because you could have gone back a little while. You know?
Arriving at like a polished thing almost instantly. And it's just like, but what about all this other stuff that could work? Like, this for the one solution you're showing me, there's 10 others that I kind of want to see. It's quite funny you're talking about the files, because that's essentially the ongoing debate, I think, because everyone works in Figma. We have our creative, like our brand team in there, and we're all a messy bunch. Like, ideas don't come out in a grid ordered. They certainly don't go left to right. So you'd like, you might have a chain of thought just goes up and down and diagonals and things like that. And then you've got the digital kind of creatives that are just, everything's so neat, everything's ordered, everything's labeled. It's like, if those two could be polar opposites, here they are.
And we have the same thing. It's we're gonna be like a poster advert for Figma on the back of this, but it does matter, and it's really interesting, because it helps the creative process, and sometimes not, right? So I think it's kind of interesting to get that balance. Obviously, you've got a great profile in the industry. You've got a great portfolio. There's obviously something quite magic about your team and how you're building those relationships. And it kind of sounds like it's very conversational. Like, you're not trying to hide things. You're trying to be honest. People are seeing things before they're, you know, quote unquote, finished. Practically, what does it look like? Do you have like formal check-ins on a weekly basis with clients, or is it like, hey, you've got a question, let's hop on a call and we'll have a chat and we'll show you where we are? How does that sort of dynamic?
To be honest, it could be a little bit of both. So we'll have on the very informal end of the spectrum, we have a Slack channel kind of set up, so everyone can just talk to anyone else. So one of the design team, the CEO, whoever it is, can ask anyone a question that's in that channel. We've worked with clients that want to share inspiration and kind of in that way as well. We'll share files and documents within that channel. We'll have more kind of formal meetings, like these key milestones, but depending on the process and the clients and like how quickly, I guess, we want to move through certain phases, we might do more informal check-ins that are just like, let's jump on a call. We're not going to create a deck. We're just going to look through Figma and we're going to show you what's kind of resonating with us, where we think it's interesting. Let's see if you agree. I think it's only nearer the end of the process where we're much more kind of, here's some actual decks that you need to kind of look at and see how that works for you.
It sounds very familiar to like, I spent most of my career building in-house teams or working as part of an in-house team. And it sounds very much like the kind of relationship we try to do with our clients, which are largely our like senior leaders across, you know, I'm a part of a big business now. And we've tried to do a lot less of this formal procession. It's quite nice to have a bit, milestones, bullet points, actual places where you go, hey, we'll take a pause and have a look back. But I love that you guys are almost like an extension to that brand.
Yeah.
And it's like you're working in-house with them. It's kind of like it feels like the conversation's flowing, and that obviously seems like it's working really well.
Definitely. I think we kind of hold quite an important kind of role between the kind of the marketing team, the product team, and then there's us, and we're kind of helping everyone join everything together as well, because often marketing, you might notice, marketing teams and product teams don't necessarily talk to each other. So they're going on over here, budget come from different places as well, kind of requirements do as well. So kind of us sitting in that kind of position allows us to really make sure what we're creating will benefit both teams, and both teams are on board. They know the direction. We can understand the language of both teams. We can take everyone on the journey with us.
It's hard though, right? Trying to distill the process, unless you verbatim go, hey, I'm going to reference the double diamond process, and that's how we sell our package. And I see lots of teams try to do that stuff, and it kind of works. Or we're going to use Google Design Sprint, and it's exactly by the method. And again, it doesn't really work in my experience for most companies and brands. Because I guess the design process is actually quite adaptive, and it's all contextual to the client and the kind of people you're working with and the constraints and the time pressures and the money. So it's hard to articulate it sometimes. It's kind of why I ask the challenging questions, because I think often I learn something totally new.
I mean, we have a four-stage process, I'm sure, like many studios do. And that process has different tasks inside of that process. We'll want to hit different milestones that live within each of those to make sure we're kind of running the project to our timeline that we've given the client. But that's kind of about it. The way in which we do the tasks could change from client to client, because I'm a big fan of like just learning from that process. And did it work? Did we get the best work out of it? Was there a problem along the way? Did someone not quite understand it because we presented it in that way, or talked about the work in that way, or because we did this process before this process? Like, we'll kind of learn and change that around. And I think really design should be more like that. It feels quite old school when you're kind of talking to clients and they're like, well, they just went away and came back after like 2 months. Like, there's a curtain reveal. Here's the final brand, and you've not been on that process. Like, that does feel like Mad Men vibes, rather than this like quite adaptive, quite nimble process that can just adapt and change depending on what the client really needs and their team setup and everything else.
Exactly. And I think, I don't know, I've mentioned this a few times, it's probably going to come like a little brand on my social media, but like, the design thinking is a really great way to brand something that is organic. And I often call it just thinking, right? Like, it's just thinking about the process. But what's quite interesting, I heard someone from it, I don't remember when and where, but design thinking isn't a process, it's more of a culture. And so it's not, there are obviously stages you go through. This is creativity and how you go from zero to something. But it's more the culture that you can foster with your clients and your own team to think out actually how are we thinking about the problem? How do we build the narrative? How do we validate this with the customer? And how to develop a solution. But it's not a box per se. So there are milestones, but it's quite organic, right, in reality.
Yes.
Between those.
Yeah, completely. And I mean, with the work that we do, there's so many kind of separate swim lanes essentially of different activities going on. You might have like brand voice going on, you've got your UX sprint, you've got digital design sprints, you've got brand sprints. There's so many different arms to it. Use too many metaphors there altogether, but there's too many things going on to kind of say, well, it has to follow this exact process, because you might find, well, we haven't hit here yet for this particular work sprint, so we need to kind of just pause a little bit on some of these others. And it's just like this quite fluid process that sometimes is a bit stop start, but hopefully if you've kind of got it right, it's very smooth.
True. Yeah, we've seen some great diagrams in that, right? Trying to articulate it for designers. It's like spaghetti chucked on the wall.
Hand movements.
I want to shift gear a little bit. I know we've spoken in the past about, how the pandemic has impacted, output, and as it has done, like, everyone. But what I really loved last time we were having a sort of general catch-up was, you had a real focus on culture and how the culture was having to evolve and adapt based on the pandemic. So I'd love to know what you guys are up to and what culture looks like at Studio.
Yeah, sure. So I think this is almost like a bit of a newer role that I think when, as we were kind of talking about or mentioned earlier, like 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago now, like mid-pandemic, myself and Gemma Ballinger were asked to take over Output. So kind of very kind of swift kind of different role change coming up. But as one of those things, one of the things I've really enjoyed about it is to kind of sculpt the culture, if you like, in a way that feels really, really right for us. But the way in which maybe I would have appreciated it more when I was a designer going through through different agencies. But essentially, we just want to make sure we're creating an environment where everyone can just do their best work. If I had to put it down into one sentence, that's essentially what we want to make. I think through the kind of the pandemic, there was a lot of people that were just burnt out. I think there was at one point we worked on a client that was just back-to-back sprints. I think we pushed ourselves too much. It ended with just no one wanting to work on the client anymore. Everyone feeling like it's just way too much. So we started to introduce things like finishing at 2 o'clock on a Friday was what we tried to start with. So kind of the aim was you would do your normal hours during the week. And it was in recognition of the fact you definitely work through lunches sometimes. You stay extra hours in the evening. That kind of stuff. You're probably not switching off as much because we're all in our homes. Like we've all got every app going on on there. and as an attempt to kind of help people just have a longer weekend, we started to introduce that. And we kind of tested that for maybe about 6 months. And sometimes it worked really well. And other times it was just complete chaos because we didn't manage to put the restrictions in place to protect that time, I think would be kind of fair to say. So some people were managing to finish clients if they needed a deadline, if they had a deadline or needed something from us, they're knocking at the door and we've got to jump on something. So instead we've moved to, it needs rebranding as something else, but it's the like 9-day fortnight that everyone's kind of trying to do, where we're kind of doing Friday. That's in a kind of an effort to take time away from the screen to like lead to better work, hopefully, for people to kind of just take a step back, like go and see some art, go see your parents, mess around with your friends, whatever it is that you kind of want to do, then do it so that we can make sure we get the best out of you when you're kind of in work. And we tried that over the summer. We've turned that now into a long-term thing.
Great.
So I think that's kind of one of the big things that we've kind of changed on the back of the pandemic. But I think that kind of goes hand in hand as well with like flexible working or adaptable working, where essentially you're recognizing that people have a life. It's not all about going to work and like coming to your lounge to go to work or going into an office or something to work. Like if you need to drop your kids off at school or go to the gym in the morning, whatever it is that you need to do those things and then come to work ready to work and don't worry about those things for the rest of the time. And like do amazing work when you're with us and then kind of just switch off and get on with the rest of your day, essentially. So we try to be as like flexible as possible. Like we've got a studio in Bethnal Green at the minute, but we're moving in February to Farringdon.
Oh, cool.
So in the hope that it'll be a little bit easier for everyone to get to more than anything else, but we weren't quite sure how much people would go into the studio and things like that. So we wanted to just have like a test ground first, which Bethnal Green operated as for a while. But you can come into the studio as much as you want, as little as you want. Like we recognise that we do great work together there. Makes my job easier if I can just move around some tables and say, like, I want to see what everyone's doing than having to have lots of calls. But I'm not the important one in this situation, is the team. And I want to make sure everyone's happy and doing the things that they want to do in the environment that they want to do them in. And then, on the back of that, we've done lots of things about, like fostering kind of creativity, making sure we've got really clear career progression. We've done, like, we do a kind of a partnership with YCN. So kind of doing lots of like micro courses and then big kind of big 6-week courses with the team around all sorts of different topics, from like leadership to kind of skills for creativity or kind of having difficult conversations. Like there's so many different topics in there that you can kind of learn about. And that means anyone could kind of, again, just kind of develop and learn in any way that they want to. So I think maybe like all of these things, we're kind of developing all the time. We're thinking about how, what we could introduce that would benefit the team, benefit us as leaders. I think we'll continue to iterate on that in itself. Like, as I say, I'm such a fan of just try it. If it works, if it helps, let's continue doing it. If it doesn't and it's causing more problems than it's worth, like when we did a Friday 2 o'clock finish, then scrap it. Let's try something else. And we'll do that whilst it resonates.
Yeah, it's good again, like applying design philosophy, right? Like to like, okay, we've got a genuine problem of how do we make people's lives better? Which pause a second, I still find is absolutely insane up until we were forced to go into lockdown. Apparently flexible working wasn't a thing. People didn't even think remote would work. Most companies, right? And now, you know, where we are today, it's kind of just the norm. But it's good that you're kind of invested in the team and trying to recognize that you need space. And you know, a lot of like famous designers or artists, and say, oh, where'd you get inspiration from? And they go, oh, it's, you know, when I go on a walk and stuff. But it's true, like actually that context change and having some space where you're not like getting all those stress hormones and chemicals flooding your brain allows you to think laterally. And without that, then of course it might be more productive, but you're not necessarily being creative.
Yeah, that's it. Just take a step back for a minute and you'll probably the answer will probably present itself.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Now I know that somewhat sort of related to this is the output has been thinking about how do you kind of contribute, not just internally and with the clients, but to the wider community. Where are you guys with that? What was it? I remember we had like a little tease and going, oh, we're looking at something, but what are you doing for the wider community?
I think this was actually like a product of, again, during the pandemic. And I think at the time there was a lot of awareness around Black Lives Matter, ways in which the fact that the design scene itself is just not fair. And there were lots of conversations that we were having internally of like, well, how can we have a voice? How can we show people our perspective on this? How can we help other people get into the industry? Or how can we make sure we're doing the right things as a business? So we've been doing a few things. I mean, from a local community, I mean, one of the things we really liked in Bethnal Green was we could do things more with the actual locality of like where we were. So we were partnered with a school for Digital Day last year, and we went in something crazy like 150 children we had to kind of look after and kind of work through a project with them. I think it was the WWF that kind of set and kind of introduce them to design, show them some kind of things that we should be thinking about, and then they were coming up with like an app or a brand or something that would kind of reflect that. I mean, massive eye-opening for everyone involved, and a bit of a crazy day, but so kind of rewarding to feel like we were putting something back in the area that we were actually like operating in. We've just done a scheme as well through this company called Lift, who are founded by the government, where they basically help fund interns from non-design backgrounds. And we were a part of that. We had an amazing intern who's still with us. Like, we've taken him on for a much longer stretch, but kind of, again, that feels like something that we can really help and help grow. Like give him confidence, give him some skills, work out what he's best at, and then see how he wants to kind of go from there. So it's the kind of that side of things, which is very like, I guess it's hands-on, it's not kind of theoretical in any way. And then the other side is we've got a new version of the output website is going to be going out hopefully in the next couple of months. And as part of that, there's going to be like a section where we've been all of us asking each other to kind of contribute to some kind of how-to guides, like from everyone's perspective. So like producers can write things for clients as much as like themselves of like, how to get into production, how to write a spec sheet for a website, how to scope something, those kind of things. And any of the designers, our finance director can write something about how to get into being like an FD within a design agency. Like, who knows how to get into some of these industries? and we can really start to open up the doors with that. But then we could also have some kind of bit more of the kind of behind the scenes stuff with the projects that we work on or areas that we're interested in, or kind of offer advice and kind of thought essentially for our clients, our peers, because we have a voice and we kind of want to use it in the best possible way.
So that's
something that we've been working on for absolutely ages now, because I'm sure as everyone knows that an agency, the agency stuff goes at the back of the line. So as soon as kind of client work comes in, it gets kind of pushed to the back. So thankfully we've kind of had a quieter December. So we've been powering through that work to try and get something up and running. So the plan is to hopefully launch in kind of April time. So kind of a bit of a refresh of like the output site, some of the projects that are on there, and then have this kind of area where we can just have the ability to share our voice, our thoughts, and hopefully help guide younger versions of ourselves or our clients or anyone that's just interested in essentially what we do.
Nice. And I guess there's like, it's philanthropic, that's the right word, I'm sure it is. You're kind of giving back, right? And which people need, right? They need the inspiration and access to the content. But I guess for you as a business, and is it about giving the designers like a stage, a profile to share their ideas? I'm assuming it's a value exchange as well, right?
Yes. Which is quite nice. I mean, for any of the team, I think their voice is as important as everyone else's, and they should have a vehicle to talk about something if they want to talk about it. I mean, nothing's going to be kind of penned by anyone else. They're responsible of writing this content. Someone's going to still check it at the end. But they're responsible of writing that content of things that move them, that they're passionate about, or they would have loved someone to tell them. Or I guess for the clients, I mean, we're hoping some of this stuff is really beneficial for them, like how to give the best feedback. Let's help our clients help us make the best work as well.
Nice. Circular economy.
Yeah, very much.
Nice.
Obviously it's very transparent, I think, as well, which obviously we're talking about the way in which we approach our projects. Like, it's very transparent. It's a conversation between us and the teams that we're working with. Very much an open dialogue. And I think it's just an extension of that. Like, I think if we come up with any tools or formats for anything, we'll share those files and things like that. It's just we don't need to be secretive. If we've got a format that works for some strategy presentations, why don't we just make it neutral branding and share it and things like that as well? So
cool. No, I'm sure I'm going to be looking at some of these articles. I'm sure a lot of the community will appreciate it. Well, we are burning through our time together, which is a real shame, because we could again keep just going down these all these great ventures you're looking into. But I've got like two of my big closing questions, which it's like sometimes hard to answer, but kind of like to see what people come up with. The sort of penultimate one is, how do you personally define great design?
Oh, you are saving the most horrible ones till the end.
I know, it's a tough one, sorry.
Thank you. That is quite a horrible question. I guess for me, and this is very much my opinion on this, would be, great design is provocative. I think it gives you, it's like an immediate response, good or bad, but essentially it's about standing out for like the right reasons, not because of a trend or fancy doing something, but because there's a real purpose and a drive and a mission that's really enabling businesses to transform themselves. Would be, I think, my response to what good design is. So you're kind of seeing, I don't know, originality of thought or more innovative tools or technologies or something like that being used to really create this end result. But I was thinking about this earlier and it's like, tidy design is what I would probably describe a lot of design ends up to be. It's very tidy, it's very neat, it's what you kind of want to see following like quite old school principles of what good design is. But I think for me, good design, great design is actually hate it. some studios put out work on about that is horrible, but it's provocative, it stands out, it's completely setting apart themselves from the rest of the category, and I think for me that makes great design.
I would agree, like it's provocative is that I've seen a lot of stuff that's like last year there was a bit of a trend that started to develop on like the web design community, and it went like super crisp, super clean, like you couldn't tell there were pixels, to like, okay, the theme is now like ultra pixeled, as if it was a 1980s game from the back. And initially I was like, oh, I don't like this, this is horrible. And I was like, actually, I'm kind of into it now. It's kind of like, it's like Game Boy Mario style in web. And actually, you know, I kind of haven't seen it in web, and it's quite nice to make the choice to do that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I get it. It was provocative, and it changed my opinion, and I liked it. It's cool.
Starting with a little bit of a green emoji.
Oh, yeah. And at the end, it was like star eye emoji. And then the sort of final question, again, about, it's kind of a hard one, but also nice to see your reflections, is if you had a time machine, right, and you could go back to your 18-year-old self, if it's design or life or love or whatever, what advice would you impart?
I really hate this question. So,
sorry.
Do you know what? I think I kind of started thinking about this earlier, and I was just like, oh, I need to do this, this, and this. Then I wasn't 18 then. That would be like advice for myself as like 25 or something like that, where I was like mid career. Mm. So I had to go back even further. But me as an 18-year-old, actually quite liked, because I was at art college. I was trying loads of different things. I was like embraced in this whole culture, which was completely different. Like just trying everything, like illustration, art, product design, like everything was to be played with. So it was a real highlight for me. And I was meeting loads of people that I hadn't met before. Like, you're just pushing yourself out of that space. So I was thinking about that time. And I think for me, if I was going to give myself advice, then looking back on me now, I was doing all of this amazing stuff, but life just got in the way. And maybe that's the way for a lot of people, but those things just, like, that was a really happy time for me. I was doing so much creative work, and it just kind of gets streamlined, doesn't it, as you get older, as you move in your career and things like that. So I think it would be about kind of keeping some of that up, trying to keep a resemblance of that. Like, I'd love it if I was still being a bit of a maker at the weekends or something like that, and trying to do some things outside of that world. I definitely kept some of it up for a while afterwards. I can remember doing things with potatoes, like potato printing of like typefaces, like,
oh, gotcha, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Typefaces with potatoes, like in my 20s. So there's part of that like makery, trying things still was carrying on, but yeah, just got put by the wayside, I think, as my career just took over and things like that. So definitely keeping those things up. It's a nice release, isn't it, to, especially now and maybe after pandemic as well, to just go, right, screen down. Let's roll up the sleeves. Let's get a bit lucky, get some potatoes out and make something stupid with them, or just doodle some things. And that kind of attitude, I think, would be great.
Yeah. That's actually cool. That's really cool advice. It's just like, let's have fun.
Yeah.
I totally get that. It's a really good place to close. And I had it in my head, did not have typeface in my head. And I remember actually doing that at like college as well. For some reason, I was like, oh, you must be really into like spud guns. I don't know why. I was like, actually, that'd be quite good fun. That'd be quite good fun to go around and shoot my wife with a spud gun. She would not. But hilarious. Cool. Well, it's been awesome having you on the podcast, Johanna. It's really, really cool. Before we like totally wrap up, can you give us your domain? Where can we send people to learn more about yourself and Output and definitely all those great places?
So just to confuse everyone, it's studio-output.com. Come and check us out.
Well, thanks again. Really appreciate you taking the time.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us today on the Design Podcast. The show is produced by the Snook Brothers, hosted by Ash and Snook, and edited by Eric Snook. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd appreciate you leaving a star rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Stay connected with us on Instagram or LinkedIn. Our handle is design_podcast. Or check out the website designpodcast.co. Thanks again, and take care, folks.